Welcome back, fellow lore hunters, to Chapter 2 of our Divine into the Revelations Mythos. If you remember, we left off with the Divine Civil War between Rao and Amatsu, a celestial sibling throwdown that makes any family drama you've ever experienced look like a tea party. Rao, the golden boy of the light, ultimately cast this chaos-loving brother into the shadowy void known as Acheron, giving rise to the duality that now echoes across time. Light and darkness, order and entropy, Rao and the other guy. But as gods receded from their mortal stage, humans, those resilient, trouble-prone meatbags begin to write their own chapters. Time marched forward, as it tends to do, dragging humanity out of its cave-dwelling days and into the age of empire-building, when myths of the gods passed down through the shaky oral traditions and half-burned scrolls, people clung to the legacy of Rao like it was a divine gospel. Naturally, there were factions. You had devout believers who saw Rao as the one and only truth, the celestial source of life, order, and Sunday blessings. And then, in classic human fashion, you had the others, skeptics, heretics, and secretive cultists who whispered about the Forgotten One, Amatsu, the so-called God of the Shadows, the misunderstood emo sibling of the Divine Pantheon. They didn't speak his name loudly, but they believed he wasn't gone, just lurking, like a bad thought waiting to be remembered. During this time of crusades, when faith and steel went hand in hand, rose a devout, militant order known as the Warriors of Rao. Think medieval paladins with divine gym memberships. These were zealots in holy armor who not only defended their sacred lands but expanded them, swinging swords for righteousness and real estate. Among those rose a man who would become a legend, Alexander Silicon. Now, the name might sound like a rejected tech startup founder, but don't let that fool you. This dude was the real deal. Tactical genius, charismatic leader, and spiritual bulldozer. He united warring clans under Rao's banner, led armies through grueling campaigns, and eventually discovered a sprawling, unclaimed land teeming with beauty and opportunity. His followers, high on both faith and adrenaline, crowned him king on the battlefield. And so, the Silicon Kingdom was born. It wasn't just a nation, it was THE nation. A center of culture, military might, and a spiritual authority for centuries to come. Alexander's reign marked the beginning of a royal bloodline, and an era where humans didn't just worship the divine, they began embodying it. He became a myth wrapped in muscle and armor, remembered not just as a warrior, but as a founding god-king in his own right. But let's shift gears now, step away from the swords and the kings, and wander into the candle-lit corners of the world. Far from the battlefield, tucked away in libraries, temples, and the lonely roads between holy cities, lived a man named Yurokodami. Now, if Alexander was a muscle, Yurokodami was the mind, a philosopher, scholar, mage, and borderline madman. Yurokodami was like the Socrates of the realm. Only instead of annoying people with questions, he wrote everything. He studied the old myths, decoded the fractured history of Rao and Amatsu, and scoured the world for truths others were too scared or too dumb to see. His most prized creation? A thick purple leather journal embossed with Rao's sigil, a sun wrapped in ancient glimpse. This wasn't your average diary. It was a divine scrapbook, filled with ancient prophecies, lost knowledge, and insights into the spiritual war that shaped the world. And then, everything changed. Yurokodami was captured by a sect that rejected Rao entirely. Heretics who believed in a different power, perhaps even Amatsu himself. These weren't your average cultists either. They were brutal, organized, and terrifyingly committed. As punishment for his heresy of worshipping Rao, they gouged out Yurokodami's eyes. Blinded and bleeding, he was tossed into a cell and left to rot. But in the darkness, something miraculous happened. Rao came to him. Not in the flesh, not in a booming voice, but in a vision so tense, so real that Yuro Kodama felt his soul lift. It wasn't just a visit, it was emerging. He saw Rao. And also was Rao? For a fleeting god-kissed moment, Yuro Kodama's consciousness aligned with the divine. And through this terrifying, beautiful link, he was given a gift, the sight, a power to see the future and the past across time and reality as if flipping pages in a comic book. Though blind, he could see more clearly than ever before. From that moment on, he continued writing, guided not by his eyes, but by prophecy. He became a beacon of knowledge, speaking of events that hadn't happened yet and whispering truths from long-forgotten ages. And yet, he knew his time was limited. As his body weakened, Yuro Kodama met a boy, an orphan, starving, left to die on the roadside by a world that had no use for him. The boy's name was Trevor Sinclair, and like many legendary apprentices, he had no idea he was about to be thrust into Destiny's furnace. Yuro Kodama took him in, raised him, and taught him everything. History, scripture, philosophy, and most importantly, magic. Not parlor tricks or stage illusions, but the ancient arts gifted by Rao himself. Elemental manipulation, protective wards, healing spells, and rituals so complex they could bend reality. Trevor soaked it up like a sponge in a thunderstorm. The bond between them became something more than teacher and student. It was a legacy. Before he died, Yuro Kodama passed down his greatest treasure, the book, the Purple Journal, the culmination of his life's work. Along with it, he gave Trevor one final prophecy. Another will come, someone like me, gifted, chosen. When you find them, teach them, prepare them. They will be the one to change everything. With his mentor buried and the book clutched close, Trevor Sinclair disappeared into the world. Guided by the dying wish of a blind prophet and the knowledge that destiny was no longer a question of if, but when. And with that, we fast forward again, because the real storm? Yeah, that's still on the horizon. Let's now dive deeper into the next chapter of the Revelation lore. Roughly 30 years after the events with Trevor, Yuro Kodama, and the fateful birth of that mysterious book. Our story now shifts focus back to the glorious Silicon Kingdom. An empire so vast and powerful, it could possibly give the Roman Empire a run for its money. The kingdom, undefeated and unchallenged for generations, was about to witness the birth of its next chapter, literally, in the form of a newborn prince called Henry. Henry was born to King Barnabas and Queen Alina, two rulers who held the kingdom together with tradition, wisdom, and just the right amount of stern parenting. You know, the type, loving, but if you broke a vase, they'd remind you of your mistake every time you walked by that now empty pedestal. Henry wasn't alone for long. 5 years later, along came Winston, his younger brother, the Robin to his Batman, or so he liked to think. The two were inseparable and insufferable. Terrorizing palace staff with their antics, sneaking into restricted wings, and turning royal banquets into medieval WWE. King Barnabas, ever the serious monarch, had one mission in life, to mold Henry into the greatest king the Silicon Kingdom had ever seen. Henry, to his credit, took this seriously. Between sword lessons, court etiquette, and how to give a speech without falling asleep, the boy was groomed to rule. Meanwhile, Winston, realizing he wouldn't be sitting on any thrones, chose a different path. He asked his mother for permission to join the Silicon Guard Academy, dreaming of becoming the kingdom's strongest protector. She agreed, and thus began Winston's own journey toward glory. By the time they reached their late teens and early 20s, both brothers had found their callings. Henry took on more royal responsibilities, getting involved in matters of the crown, while Winston rose through the ranks of the Guard Academy, forming strong bonds, especially with his best friend, Finn Fletchling, a born leader who would go on to become the commander of the Silicon Guard itself. As for Henry, his destiny took an unexpected turn the day he wandered the kingdom's lower quarters and stumbled into a small, noisy tavern. And even more unexpectedly, into a woman who would change his life. Olive, the tavern girl with enough sass to shatter egos like cheap glass, caught the prince's attention immediately. Where others fawned over him, she met him with suspicion and sarcasm. Naturally, he was hooked. Their romance blossomed in secret, like a royal soap opera, until eventually it became public. By the time Henry turned 21, King Barnabas had passed, and Henry was crowned king. Olive, now his queen, stood beside him as the kingdom entered a new era. Queen Alina remained alive, though her health was fading, and Winston, now captain of the Silicon Guard, stood strong with Finn by his side. But every king needs companions, and among Henry's closest was a man named Cedric Astria. Cedric, a common-born citizen, had become one of Henry's most trusted friends. He wasn't nobility, he wasn't magical yet, and he didn't own any castles. What he did have was courtesy, grit, and a genuine soul. He spent most of his time hanging out with Trevor Sinclair, who had since moved into the kingdom and opened up his own magic shop. Despite being much older, thanks to some convenient magic that slowed his aging, Trevor had the energy of a middle-aged coffee addict and the wit of a man who'd seen too much. Cedric, Henry, and Trevor formed a trio of best friends, each bringing something to the table. Cedric had a heart, Henry had leadership, and Trevor had literal spells. But while Henry juggled ruling and romance, Cedric fell deeply in love with a woman named Carrie. They eventually married and prepared to start a family, but fate, in classic Revelations fashion, had other plans. Carrie fell ill while pregnant, stricken with a mysterious disease no healer could cure. Cedric was desperate, begging Trevor to use his magic to save her. Trevor tried, he really did, but nothing worked. Eventually, Cedric pushed Trevor to use the ancient book left by Yurokodami, the one filled with lore, spells, and prophecies. Trevor refused, citing the dangers of the book, but Cedric, growing more unhinged by grief, found the book himself and discovered its secrets, ancient maps, divine histories, and cryptic prophecies, one of which spoke of the rise of Amatsu and the chosen warriors who would stop him. Unbeknownst to Cedric, Trevor had already tried using a spell from the book in a desperate attempt to save Carrie. While the spell failed to save her, it allowed their daughter, Lila, to survive. But hidden beneath this tragedy was a scandal. Trevor and Carrie had secretly grown close, perhaps too close, though the child was confirmed to be Cedric's. This betrayal, when discovered much later, would further unravel the bonds of friendship and trust. Devastated by the loss of his wife, Cedric spiraled, though he had friends and a newborn daughter to anchor him, his mind fixated on the prophecy of Amatsu's return. His friends urged him to move on, to focus on Lila and leave myths to the past. He listened, for a time. He raised Lila with care, finding solace in her presence, but the shadows of that prophecy never left him. As Lila grew into a child, Cedric expanded his circle of friends beyond the kingdom. He met Flair, the elemental lord of a nearby village, who wielded the powers of fire passed down from the Divine War era. Flair's wife, Christine, balanced his flames with her inherited power of ice. Together, they ruled their village while managing the burden of their generational curses. Cedric was also made ties with the Dragon Howlers, a guild from a neighboring town. Among them was Lloris, a gifted mechanic and engineer whose inventions could rival magic in their complexity. While the specifics of how Cedric met these new allies aren't terribly important, just know this: the world was growing smaller, the players were assembling, and something far greater was beginning to stir beneath the surface of history. And so, with a widowed father turned seeker of forgotten truths, a royal family caught between duty and love, and whispers of a long-dead god waiting to rise again, the next age of Revelation saga inches ever closer to eruption. Buckle up. because what's coming next will test the hearts, loyalties, and legacies of every soul in the kingdom.